Hello, welcome to the Trumpet, special quarantine edition. As always, I'm your host, Robert Gene Pelleccio. Just wanted to do an intro to this episode, since this is kind of a special deal. If you are listening to this episode, this may not sound any different to you, but if you are seeing me right now, if you're watching on Facebook or our website, elephantroomproductions.com, or our YouTube page, you will see that this is our very first visual episode of The Trumpet. I'm very, very excited to present this. This was a lot of fun to figure out, to put together. This is a discussion episode, one I've been wanting to do for a while. I wanted to do this special little intro, though, to just basically say, as this is our first foray into the visual medium with this show, there are a couple technical hiccups that I am learning through. There are a couple audio sync issues with my guests' video and audio. There are a couple sound issues with the intro and outro music that I was having trouble working around. Hopefully you will be hearing a better quality version of that when I stop talking. But I just wanted to give you a heads up that this is a new, exciting thing we are trying, and as I figure it out, I hope to do many, many more of these in the future. Thank you, as always, for listening, and thank you for those of you who are watching The Trumpet, and please stay safe, stay indoors, and enjoy this special visual episode of The Trumpet with my guests Emily McLean, Christy Wyatt, and Lee Lewis. Hello, and welcome to The Trumpet, the official podcast of Elephant Room Productions, first special video edition. As always, I am your host, Robert Gene Pelleccio, and I always do this from my home, but now I have to. So we are doing a very special discussion episode, and I am joined today by a couple of very special guests. We have back playwright and theater educator Emily McLean, and we have the co-artistic directors of Showcase on Main, Lee Lewis and Christy Wyatt. Thank you guys so much for coming on with us today. I can't talk.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on with me today. Emily, you have been on the show before, but if you could just kind of refresh people as to your theater background and everything about you.
Okay, I am a theater educator and a playwright based out of Atlanta, Georgia. And Elephant Room did a phenomenal reading for my play Cheek by Jowl. Actually, it was about a year ago, right? It was last March.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I know, time flies, right? And just, it's been a really nice artistic friendship that has kind of come up between us, and I really enjoyed that whole experience, and you guys are great, and with the shelter in place in Georgia as well, I've been at home, and so I got to participate in some of the Elephant Room or Elephant Ears play readings that you did for the month of April, so I got to do two of those, and that was really fun. So yeah, just hanging out, writing plays, moving to digital teaching for my high school theater kids, which is super weird. But yeah, making it work. Yeah. So
I believe everybody on this call is a teacher in some capacity. So
yeah,
we all feel your pain. And Lee and Christy, as you have never been on before, can you tell us a little about yourself and your kind of theater background and what you are currently involved with?
You go first?
You can go first.
Okay. I went to a performing arts high school, and then upon graduating, I decided I wanted to be a special education teacher. So I went kind of in a different acting route. I feel like it's the same as being a performer because I perform all day long for some of the harshest critics around. And now I'm very active in the community theater in our area, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Jersey area. I am a resident teaching artist for Artworks for All in Dover, Delaware. So we service individuals with disabilities, both cognitive and physical. And we put we do performing arts. We work with them in their class, and then we put on a performance at the end. And then also 4 years ago.
Very lucky to be a part of one and a half of those.
That's a lot of fun. So, doing that for a while. So I'm excited to start that back up again someday when this is all over. And then 2 years ago, Lee and I opened our own theater in downtown Elkton, Maryland. And then just this past year, we actually opened in our own building instead of using other buildings and other theaters. We actually got our own location, so now we have a home. And so now we work on that quite often. It's like having a fifth full-time job.
Yeah. I went to Towson University as an actor and quickly learned that I wasn't. And became a stage manager, tech guy, and director, and then focused mainly on direction. Became the artistic director of Milburn Stone Theater. Was that for about 10 years. Left there, went and worked as the technical director for Delaware Theater Company for a season. Then opened our own space. And we literally opened and started going full force, did a lot of cool things. And then within 6 months, got closed from the COVID. And this background noise.
It sounds like we have an extra guest joining us.
He's a theater dog.
Yeah.
Hoping his dream role is Toto in The Wizard of Oz.
That's okay. I just realized one of the cats is put away, but the other isn't. So if he makes an appearance, we'll see. I'm sorry, Lee. Go ahead.
Sally will be a reoccurring guest. We really started finally hitting our stride. We did a production of Steel Magnolias. Had 5 of the 6 shows were sold out. We were about to do Godspell. First weekend of that was pretty much sold out, and we had to refund all of those tickets. So that was a lot of fun. Here we are now. We're all trying to figure out this crazy new world together with doing things online and figuring out how we're gonna go forward.
And that's the main point of discussion today. We have done a couple of these discussion episodes in the past. They've been a lot of fun. And a topic that has always been very near and dear to my heart is the topic of streaming / recording for preservation purposes theater. And fun fact, I was always planning on doing this episode. Time just kept getting away from me, but I feel like there are a lot of great pros, a lot of good con arguments too, but there's a lot of healthy, meaty discussion to be had about the good and the bad of live streaming and recording theater. Then the world just stopped. So I think there's no more appropriate discussion topic than this now, because at the time being, it's kind of unfairly skewed, but I feel like a lot of the con arguments have gone away, whether temporarily or not. So just to jump into it, I'll go into some specific examples, but whoever wants to jump in first, just what is your general take on recorded theater versus live theater, and what are, for you, the pros and cons?
Well, for me, I have actually never been a fan of recorded theater. I kind of feel like that's not what theater is. Theater in its essence is a live medium. I get the pros of archival footage, archival productions. You know, I certainly have taken advantage of Lincoln Center's archival library. But I think that as someone who is going to watch theater, a video of a live production cannot compare to the actual experience of seeing something live. That said, I actually just had a conversation tonight with a friend who said, you know, those folks that are in like the Midwest that can't get to New York, can't get to LA to see a live show, is it not a benefit for them to see a video of, you know, say Into the Woods? That's a great sort of exemplar of a video show. And that is, if something can introduce something, mm-hmm. somebody to theater, and that's the only thing that they have, then that's great. But you can't replace that feeling of a live show.
No, I agree. Yeah. Emily?
I think it's always going to be in terms of supplemental too, right? Because it is, it's the core of what we do, that connection and relationship that the performer has with the audience that's truly there in the room. It's what makes theater different from film, because the things that film has as an advantage over theater is its ability to be mass produced and widely distributed, right? So anyone, whether you're in the Midwest, whether you're in a little, you know, bumble town in nowhere, Georgia, you can watch the same movie, you can experience the same story and be a part of that. And I do think that theater could benefit from something that is kind of a hybrid, with the understanding that it's never going to replace that essential thing. It's going to be this stepping stone towards bringing those people into the theater, right? Because that's, as an art form, our audience base is graying a little bit. And so I think that has to be a consideration too, that how do we reach younger generation of audience, and how do we draw them in and get them in the habit of buying a ticket to a physical theater space where they're in the room with us?
Yeah. And what about you, Christy? Any thoughts on pros and cons?
Yeah, I guess this would be from a somewhat performer standpoint. During all of this quarantine, I'm in charge of recording church services for the church that I work at. And I also sing there at the church. And so now, instead of just singing in a live worship service on a Sunday, we record everything. And at first I was like, this is so great, because I can do it over again if I mess it up or if I don't like the way I sounded that first time. But the reverse of that is kind of that I think I'm three times as self-conscious now, and I overanalyze everything because it's recorded forever. And so it's going to go on the internet, and we all know whatever's on the internet is there forever. So I don't feel like I take the, and this is like, you know, I'm talking church singing versus performance, but I think it kind of goes the same for the night that, you know, you're doing Beauty and the Beast and they say, we're recording tonight. And all of a sudden that night you stop taking the chances and making the choices that you were making before. You want to play it safe, and you want to make sure that what's recorded is you hitting the high note, not, you know, going for whatever could have been bigger and better or whatever choice you were making previously. And I feel like you get in your head, and that could just be a personal thing, but I think definitely,
No, to me, I am, to this day, I am haunted by the day that I got the words for Javert's suicide wrong. And that was the night that, they filmed that.
Yeah. I feel like you're no longer living in the moment of live theater, and you're no longer like, I'm just thinking back. I mean, the last show that I did that was recorded was Beauty and the Beast. And I feel like the night that they recorded, I wasn't Belle anymore. I was really focused on making sure that I looked good as Belle, because that's the recording that all 35 people in the show were going to have for the rest of their lives. And I wanted to make sure that was good, you know? And that there's something about that takes away a little bit of the fun that you have while doing it. Like, I mean, we do theater to escape for 2.5 hours, and all of a sudden I'm more stressed because I'm not myself, but I'm not a character either. I'm this weird hybrid thing, and I don't really know what's going on. So there's definitely pros and cons.
I think for me, my biggest thing goes into what Lee was saying, is it is a way to, and actually Emily touched on this too, it's a way to introduce people to theater, and it's a way to expose people to theater, not replace the theater going experience. I definitely think that as a whole, theater should remain primarily a live art form. However, Into the Woods is a perfect example. I think a lot of us grew up on the original cast being preserved. And for me, that is my biggest takeaway of recording.
I also want to say, I think that is probably one of the best versions of any show that has been preserved. You actually, that recording makes you feel like you were there. A lot of theater doesn't get that. A lot of theater can't do that. And I was trying to think, in kind of in preparation for tonight's discussion, what about that recording makes it feel so real and genuine? And I don't have the answer, but that recording is perfect. And no other recording of a live show, I feel like, has kind of grasped what they were able to get there.
And I think it's different. I think the Into the Woods recording specifically feels like, I feel like having watched that, I saw the Broadway show. But then I think about things like Newsies or Bandstand, both of which we saw in theaters. After I saw them on Broadway. I saw Newsies on Broadway. And I feel like those, and I don't know if it's just a difference in the time now, feel more like I went and watched a movie, not like I saw the Broadway show. And I saw Newsies both ways, and I feel like I saw it on Broadway, and I saw it in the movie theater, and the movie theater felt like a movie theater. And I don't know if it was the way it was recorded, if it's the fact that it's more high tech and that they can record different angles and they can record different, effects. But
they did that with Love Never Dies as well, where they had they took 3 days without an audience, and they had cameras on. They shot it. They preserved the staging, but they shot it essentially like a film. So they were on stage with the camera. They were shooting it, still in a proscenium like style, but it was definitely, a highly produced thing. Versus, I think what's perfect about Into the Woods is that it captures the style and it also captures the audience. And, like we said, it makes you feel like it's a part of it. So much so that when they did the Into the Woods movie, which, controversial opinion, I enjoyed. The thing I liked the most about it was that James Lapine actually worked on the screenplay for it. And for a lot of the "this was different" type of arguments, it's one of those rare shows that is preserved in its true form that is accessible. So that's why I was fine with those differences. But Chrissy, you actually kind of started veering in this direction. So, I'll just move on to the next thing I wanted to address was what recorded shows do you think suffered and weren't as successful as some of the other recorded presentations, or as their live format? I know you just addressed Newsies, but for anyone else, is there anyone that you saw that you instantly thought, this is not doing it for me, or this is not conveying what the show is?
I was going to say, my other example in my mind anyway, The Man Who Came to Dinner with Nathan Lane and Jean Smart, there is a recording of that play when it was on Broadway, and it's delightful, and you really do have a sense of being in the theater, in the audience, at the same time. I saw, it wasn't, it was a West End production, but I saw a production of The Woman in Black. And I don't know if you're familiar with that at all, but it was not as good as seeing it in the actual theater because of all of that atmospheric, suspenseful tension that you get from being in the room. The recording didn't really do that justice. Right. And it wasn't a great, what do they call it? Like production values for right. the recording. So.
I also think Medicated Dinner actually kind of brought this up for me. I think the thing about Into the Woods and the Medicated Dinner is that it was shot with the knowledge that it is a play. They weren't trying to make it a movie. They They really got the widescreen of the full stage, and both of those shows did that really well. I mean, The Medicated Dinner, that was a fantastic recording of that production. I think, and taking David Hasselhoff out of it, Jekyll and Hyde.
Our artistic director actually loves that production because she's
but that's fine. They tried to be cinematic about it. They tried to do the close-ups of David mm-hmm. Hasselhoff. They tried to do all of these really like cinematic things with it, and that's not what it's about. It's about
they tried to make you think David Hasselhoff could sing.
Right. Well, hey, the Germans would differ. But that, that's the thing you miss when you try to record these shows is that when we're watching them, we're watching the whole stage. We are not just close, you know, we're not just mm-hmm. seeing a close-up of actor one's face. We're seeing the right. whole thing.
I think that's the difference. In a movie version of a show, they decide for you
yes.
what you're looking at. And sometimes mm-hmm. the fun, and maybe it's just a theater person thing, like I have to ask, you know, a friend of mine who doesn't do theater. But when I go to a show, sometimes the best moments are what's happening behind the lead in the ensemble, or what little moment was created on the side, or what bit you're looking at. And I'll go back to Newsies, for example, they decided for me that I'm watching her sing center stage, and you don't always get to see the other stuff. And I think that's what, and I maybe Into the Woods is just lends itself to be more of an ensemble show. So maybe they were filming the entire stage for that reason. But I don't want you to pick for me what I'm watching, and I might want to watch the scenery. I might want to watch the backdrop. I might want to see what's happening on the screen over there. And I don't want to watch her close up today, you know, like that's, and it's the same as when you go see a musical live, we saw Something Rotten 5 times and you notice different things about it. And my mom is always like, I don't understand why you see the same show 5 times. I'm like, because I didn't see the same show 5 times. I saw 5 different casts. I saw 5 different days of that show, and sure the script and the score were the same, but it's true. But it's different. And I think when you watch Newsies on Disney Plus tonight and then you go watch it again tomorrow, it's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you can never bring from live theater to recorded theater.
Yep.
It's funny. I was just listening to a podcast about this today. I have another very, very contentious fandom opinion, but I am one of the few people that enjoy Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I have gotten to see it live on stage. I know. I'm sorry, Emily. I'm sorry. That's why I waited until after you agreed to do the show before. But that being said, it's, you know, it's not a perfect script. It's not a perfect show, but it is visually one of the most beautiful, stunning pieces of technical theater I've ever seen. And just reading the script doesn't do it justice because it's a script and you are not supposed to just read a script. But somebody raised an interesting point about it, that it's the only part of the Harry Potter fandom that is inaccessible, because you can, even if books are expensive, mm-hmm. you can get a book from the library, you can rent a movie on you know, a streaming service or on demand. That being said, that's one of those shows that I would not recommend. You know, if you're gonna preserve it at some point in the future to have it preserved, I think it needs to be, especially with certain casts. But I definitely do not think that there, it should replace experiencing that piece live.
I think there are a lot of shows that's you know, you can say that for. There are certain shows that I think lend themselves, like, take any production of Gypsy, for example. Yeah. The bones of that show are going to be the same no matter what. You're just going to see the Tyne Daly take. You're going to see the Bernadette Peters take. You're going to see the Patti LuPone take. That's a show that I think will be just as poignant watching it on a television screen as it is seeing it live. But yeah. There are certainly shows, The Band's Visit, you're not going to get the same feeling from that. Yeah.
Once on This Island, the recent revival, that was one that
it was experienced
around, right?
Yes.
And the just there's no way that you could have captured all the places that you were looking and the things that you were experiencing because
the goats.
Oh, sitting over here doesn't mean you can't catch it all.
Yeah.
For me, the one that missed the mark, and it goes back to, I'm drinking seltzer water. The one that missed the mark, and it's, this goes back to what you were saying about it. Are you making this to preserve a show, or are you making it to be a movie? And it was, I think for me, the most important piece of preserving a piece for film is you are preserving it so that this cast can be experienced in the future. You're not replacing the people who can see it now, but you are giving other people the opportunity to see it. Legally Blonde is, I would say, objectively a good musical. I can't tell that look on your face, Lee, if you're really done with me or not. But Legally Blonde has the distinction, and it's, in my opinion, not a good distinction, of being the first musical to be broadcast in its entirety on television with the original cast while the original cast was still running on Broadway. I don't know that that's a point of note for it, because they also did it for an MTV audience. So it's cut in, you know, with the interstitials for commercial were like, so is Elle gonna pick her boyfriend at the end, or is she gonna tell him to go? Tune in next. And like, it became more of a spectacle and less, I mean, it's a campy show, arguably, but God, I'm killing you, Lee. I'm sorry.
Well, no, and I hate to...
He secretly loves Legally Blonde.
I do like...
You do. I love it. I really love it.
Actually, for a musical, it's actually built quite well. But what I will say is that the issue that I have with that is that I don't think musicals that are currently on Broadway should be live for the masses.
Correct.
I'm totally fine with after they're off Broadway becoming a videoed thing that people can see, can be, you
know, like what they're planning to do with Hamilton.
Right, 100%.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But once it's on Broadway, I think that's something special that you need to, you know, it's, I don't want to say that that's my church and you should, you know, respect it, but kind of that's my church and you should respect it.
No, I agree.
On Broadway, it's live, let it be there. Let it be a live thing that you experience, not something that you watch and you see a commercial for toilet paper in the middle of. And that's what Legally Blonde did. Legally Blonde, while great and while it did bring theater to a group that would not normally theater, it also commercialized it to a place where I'm not really comfortable with. And that whole, like, who's gonna be the next Elle Woods? I'm not okay with that. You know,
well, that launched a whole trend of, like reality show casting things. There was a very unsuccessful Grease one. Mm-hmm. to their credit,
Robert, you are the one that I want. So.
Oh, well, you are. what is Andrew Lloyd Webber's company? Is it really useful?
Really useful.
Yeah. They did something for Jesus Christ Superstar and for Wizard of Oz of the same caliber. The difference there was they were still the casting directors. So it's like, you got to watch these auditions, but it wasn't like the Grease one, they were voting on.
Yeah, like, it was like American Idol.
It was even worse than that. It was freaking The Bachelor. You got a rose and you became Elle Woods. I mean, it was bad. It's yeah. It's not good. It just kind of bastardized yeah. theater. And there are a lot of people that I feel like take it seriously, and this kind of made it a joke, and I wasn't
yeah.
I do want to, I totally am on board and agree with what you're saying. I do think, though, that just you have to acknowledge that there are geographic and economic barriers yeah. to experiencing things on Broadway. You know, like I'm very fortunate. I'm able to make a trip. I got to see Hadestown. I got to see Beetlejuice. I got to see Hamilton. You know, like I have the means and the freedom in the summer to be able to do that. But that is not something that's necessarily very easy for people who are not in that geographic, you know, part of the world. So there could be a consideration. I think having it while it's still on Broadway is detrimental. I think that does, as you said, a little bit, it does cheapen the experience. But I also think that having a good high quality recording with a live audience, or maybe over the course of several nights, and then editing that together to have that experience for people who are, you know, the young kid who loves theater, who stays up and watches the Tonys every year, and who, you know, is just this devotee, but will never be able to make it and actually see it on Broadway. Yeah, I think that is a consideration.
Yeah, it goes back to that old adage I had read once. It's not a perfect argument, but it's the argument that, you know, broadcasting sports events do not prevent people from going to see them. Nobody who has access to a football game or a baseball game and has the opportunity to see it live is going to say, well, I mean, I can stay home. It just... Again, it enhances if you live in California and there's a game in, you know, Philadelphia, you're not breaking your bank to go see that necessarily.
Yeah. I think, go ahead. No, I was just going to say that they're going to, you know, would you rather them experience it with a live and a quality recording or watching somebody's crappy bootleg that they made while the usher was their back was turned?
That's what, yeah.
You know, there's that consideration too, that people are going to be jerks and, you know, make a little, you know, bootleg TikTok or whatever of Lin-Manuel Miranda and... Or what is his name? Alex Brightman. Like he called him out in the, you know, I mean, Beetlejuice can do that a little bit easier maybe than.
Or the famous Patty, stop taking pictures.
There are also, you know, 16 football games a year. And there's a limited amount of people that can sit in a football stadium. And, you know, there are eight shows a week and, you know, 1,500 seats as opposed to 8,000 seats in a stadium.
I meant 80,000.
No. No, 8,000 seats. Well, yeah, sure, 80,000. But regardless, you know, that there's that disparity there between, yes, you're right, people still go to see sporting events and watch them on TV, but, you know, there's not, you know, we have a limited number of seats in a theater. We have I don't know that I can buy into that's the same.
I said it's not a perfect argument. Same experience. That's
and it's not the same experience either. I mean, you know, when you go, I love football and I've gone to see, you know, football live, but I actually prefer football in the house. Because I can see the close-ups, I can see the, you know, what's going on the stage. But if I watch theater in my house, I don't get that same communal experience you get from watching a live show, with an audience. So there's a little bit of a, you know.
And there's something different about, there's also the aspect of live theater that, like, you go to a football game, you're not going to meet the players afterwards. You're not going to, not close to them, no matter where your seats are. You're not getting spit on by them. I mean, they're still, there's a level of, like, they are here and we are here. But Broadway does such a great job of, even the most prestigious Broadway actors are still people at the end of the day, and they still walk on the same street that I walked in on, and they're going to come out that stage door. And if you're one of those people who really wants to meet them, I mean, one time we went to a concert that Alice Ripley and Emily Skinner were doing, and we were getting ready to do Sideshow. And so after the show, it was important to us. We waited after, and they came out, and we actually got to have a conversation about that and about doing that show. And that's something that you get to do when you go to live theater. And not all the time, but I mean, it can happen. And just sitting there, you can sit in the front row, and I mean, you're like touching distance from some of those
actors. For sure.
Especially with shows like, I mean, speaking of Once on This Island, the most recent revival, like, you're sitting on the stage, like, you're right there. And that's yeah. different than a football game or a baseball game. There's still a net around you. Those guys are still little, like, I mean, you still need your binoculars to see them from the cheap uh-huh. seats. And theater's not like that. There's a difference there too, a little bit.
Well, on the topic of Lee had brought up different facets of productions, like Tyne Daly and Gypsy. I'm hopefully at some point in this quarantine going to watch the Imelda Staunton one, because I've heard a lot of great things about it. So on that subject, are there any shows that you have experienced or you have heard wind of that you think may have benefited from being preserved after the fact? I think we've already established that it's hard to justify concurrent preservation, but is there a particular take on a character or take on a role that you had never seen before that you wish that maybe you could revisit in the future or have give someone else the opportunity to see?
Who's going to talk first?
I was just going to say that as an actor, I'm a strong believer in not basing your performance off just what someone else did. And I, like, adamantly will not watch movies or other versions. I will not research what other people did. I did a production of The Fantastics, and I wouldn't advertise this to the world, but I knew nothing about it going into it. I had not read the script. Somebody was like, you should audition for that. And I was like, okay. But it ended up being such a phenomenal experience. And I feel like it's one of the best things that I ever did, because I had no preconceived notions of what it should be. I had no one sitting around at school telling me, like, oh, well, this person sang it this way. Nobody knew The Fantastics. They're like, oh, you do you. So, like,
a very unique show.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said about, I think it'd be great to record every Broadway show and be able to see it years from now, or things that I missed that were a limited run and I didn't get to see. I'd love to watch that. But, you know, then it becomes like, you know, you're watching it for the right reasons. And I don't think watching someone's take on Mama Rose because I'm about to play Mama Rose is necessarily why that should, you know what I mean? I know it's a very different question you're asking, but
just no, like,
but if you
I
think
gotcha.
About people, think about these like national treasures, you know, like a Angela Lansbury and that kind of thing. Like how, and I mean, the one that I'm thinking of anyway is just a concert version of Sweeney Todd. There may be a film version of one of the runs of the play, but the one that I'm thinking of with Lynn Carew and Angela Lansbury Patti LuPone, concert version. And I just think how nice it would have been to have that performance, but to get to see Angela Lansbury in that role as well, you know, like that's, it's gone. And I mean, it's, yeah. It is the beautiful, bittersweet thing about theater, right? Like it uh-huh. exists only in the moment. And yeah. There's something very magical about that, but there's also something very tragic because one of these days we're going to wake up and Angela Lansbury is not going to be here.
Nope,
anymore.
Stop. Nope. Nope.
No. I'm sorry,
we're
Robert.
Not,
I know.
We're not.
Really too much truth. Too much truth.
Her last four roles because I'm afraid of that. Like literally, I'm like, I saw her in Lies Fear, and I'm like, this is going to be a last
one.
Yeah.
And
then
yeah.
she's up again, and somebody else is like, damn it, I've got to see that now.
And I think I'm sure, I mean, you can speak to this as an educator, Emily, but I think there's, I only studied theater on a high school level, but we would sit in our musical theater class and watch videos of those famous people that we were learning about and those Tony Award winners that mm-hmm. maybe our generation isn't super familiar with. And I think as a teacher, 20 years from now, that's going to be Angela Lansbury and that's going to be the Patti LuPones who aren't maybe doing stuff anymore or aren't around anymore. And what are you going to show the, like, you know, will it still be important? Will you still want to show their take on things and how influential they were to theater? Yeah, probably. So, I mean, you're going to want recordings of that.
For sure. And again, it's like that archival nature of things too. And just this way that we can celebrate this person and their legacy and their lasting impact on theater. You know, somebody, I mean, seriously thinking about the Patti LuPones and the Angela Lansbury's of the world. It's like that's something that future generations need to be able to have access to. And not necessarily from like a, you're playing this role, you must do it this way. This is the correct way. No, not to say that at all, but just to celebrate what this person brought to the role. You know, all of the different guys that have been Bobby over the years, right? Like everyone is a little different. And it's, you know, just so interesting to see that particular role evolve over time.
I think it's interesting too. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I saw a production of David Mamet's Race. I had no idea what I was going into. I was doing it as, I got a free ticket, I think. And I went and it was David Alan Grier and Kerry Washington. And it was one of the most amazing pieces of theater I think I've ever seen. And I would love to be able to watch that again. And that to me is a show that if I had an opportunity to watch on television, I 100% would. But I don't know, because I know that there are like Dennis Haysbert and Eddie Izzard and there are all these people that came in afterwards. But I would love to just see that cast do that show again, because I sat there with literally my jaw on the floor for 2.5 hours, because it was just, it was a masterclass in acting. There were four actors and they were just all amazing. And I mean, I missed half the show because it was just, I was just going from, you know, scene to scene with what they were doing. And I would love to be able to relive that and see that show again. But there, I think that some of the plays that are on Broadway also, you know, don't get enough credit, that they also going to be able to be replicated. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be able to see, I mean, we saw James Earl Jones, Cicely Tyson in the Gin Game. When is that ever going to happen again? You know, so there are certainly things to be said about preserving the fact that these two titans, not titans of theater, but titans of acting in general, were on stage together in probably one of the greatest plays of the 20th century.
And it was one of those, what, 6 weeks only?
Yeah,
six weeks.
Limited run kind of thing, yeah.
So, and then that brings up the point of like people who don't live here. I mean, you are saying you are fortunate that you can come here and you can see a bunch of shows, but your five shows in a Broadway year is different than our five shows in a Broadway year, because ours could be at the drop of a hat. We live hours away and we have a free Tuesday night. Let's go see a show.
No, never.
Five shows in 1 week because that's the time I flew here for. And so that's also very different. Like, mm-hmm. we are fortunate that we can drop everything and see some of those limited runs, but some of those are the best things. And even yeah. we don't get to see them. And if we don't see them 2 hours away, I can't imagine that the other half of the country is seeing them, you know? So things like that. And it's hard because unlike a sporting event, like, okay, you know, you're excited to see the Eagles play a team in California, and yes, you, yeah. they are, and you fly
Misty,
out there.
You and I are in the same boat.
I don't know anything about sports.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I don't know football. I mean, soccer all day, but I can't talk football.
I just know if you catch the snitch, you win the game for some reason.
There you go.
I only know about one sport, and it's a bad one.
Broadway has such a there's a lot of limited things that happen. I mean, yeah. the Tony Awards. I'm never going to be able to go to that. That's one night. It's sold out from now till ever. And that's never going to happen for me. And so thank goodness it's something that is recorded and we yeah. can enjoy from home. Because, you know, there's not – sometimes it's just not possible.
Yeah.
So going back to the Newsies example, because we're seeing a lot of we're seeing a lot more of this showing plays and showing musicals in theaters. And Emily actually just reminded me by saying Angela Lansbury that there Into the Woods is not the only Sondheim preservation in that style. They did Sweeney Todd. I believe there's a Sunday in the Park with George. They yes, are done very yeah. much, in the same style where, you know, it's not about making a movie out of a show. It's about preserving the theater experience on film. So yeah. with that in mind, are there any movie musicals that you think maybe would have benefited from being done in that style, assuming that, you know, like we established with Into the Woods, it captures the essence of it being a show versus let's film this like a movie?
Well, I mean, Sweeney Todd, the movie version of Sweeney Todd is not great.
Regrettable, I think.
It happened.
I think it. You know we are lucky. No. That we are lucky that we have the concert recordings that we do. And honestly, though, to be fair, the one of the best recordings of Sweeney Todd is the one that was just done that Lonnie Price directed with Emma Thompson.
Is that one preserved?
It's I think it was at Lincoln Center, and it was supposed to be a concert, but ended up being fully staged. It's great.
Who plays Sweeney in that one? Was that Norm Lewis?
No. God.
No, he did a little bake shop in like.
Oh. Oh right, I heard about that. It was like an immersive one.
Yeah, it was real great.
Terrifying.
I can't.
Pretty sure he's gonna behead me.
Bryn Trifle, is that his name? I can't. He's an opera singer. Was the guy that that was Sweeney.
Oh my God, Sully! Hi.
But Audra McDonald was the beggar woman. I think the movie version of Sweeney was to me. Sweeney is about the ensemble. The ensemble is hugely important in that. Mm-hmm. And Les Mis is another sort of bastardization of musicals, because. You know, Sweeney Todd, Les Mis, the ensemble is really what propels the show forward, and they kind of just ignored that.
Mm-hmm. I could forgive almost every, like, under the guise of it's a film, I can forgive a lot of the Sweeney Todd things, except for the fact that Tim Burton, who I do like in other mediums, the one thing about that movie that I just cannot let go is that Tim Burton did not understand that A Little Priest is funny.
There.
And I think that's the biggest, I think there are a lot of things that, there are a lot of things that changed because, like we were saying, they were doing a movie, they weren't doing a show, and they were trying to...
And they were working with actors who were not
trained to do that.
Those types of roles.
Right.
They were working with actors who said they would never do musicals. So.
Yeah. Right, right.
And I think it's so interesting that, you know, if you look back in history, you have all these great movie musicals. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole, you know, Mickey and Judy days, mm-hmm. where they really took time to present a musical as a musical to an audience. They didn't try to hide behind modern day production value. They literally, you know, put up a show in a barn and filmed it. And if we could get back to that, I think that theater people in general would really appreciate that, because a lot of what we do is to be seen as a whole. It's not to be seen clip to clip to clip. And that to me is what a lot of these new versions.
So you're really going more for like, what are the directing techniques in the filming of the musical? Like, are you doing the long
capture the entire
choreographed number as a whole, and it's, you know, you don't try and like zero in on just one or two characters, but
right.
Well, My Fair Lady's like 3 hours, right?
Oh yes.
We are fortunate. We go to the Stratford Festival in Canada every summer, and we stay for a week and we see, you know, 6 shows, and it's amazing. And I went 1 year that Lee didn't go, and I saw, I don't even like Shakespeare all that much, but the most amazing production of Coriolanus ever to be done. And what made it so cool was the direction and the set design, and how it was a play on stage that I think the directing technique was to make it look like a movie, but with the emphasis still being on it's a stage play. That doesn't make sense unless you saw it, I guess. But they essentially...
So like as a production concept, they were filming a movie?
No, but the way that things were set up. So scenes took place in almost these little cubicles.
Okay.
And they would literally shrink into a person's face at the end. Or it would literally slide
over. That's bananas.
And it was so, and then at one point they were the doors and it would open up. Like, it was incredible to watch. And I'm glad that they filmed it, because they just announced that they're going to release it live online to watch for the next month.
Nice.
They did.
I think that goes into, yeah.
Stage.
Yeah.
Wait, what was it?
A what?
They did a car chase on stage.
It was so, I can't remember enough.
That's awesome. No, yeah, I'm totally going to check that out.
What I assume they did in recording it is that they still recorded it as a stage production, because what made it so phenomenal was not that it
was cinematic.
Like a movie, right, and that you are watching it happen live with those effects. Like, you still need to watch it from back here. I don't want the camera to zoom in on the guy's face,
because
they did that on stage themselves. Yeah. So they made it a movie already. Don't make it a movie.
That's very cool.
Don't call it coming. No.
It was so cool. I can't recommend it enough. It was very, very interesting.
Well, I guess, oh my God, Sullivan, I kind of want to grab Albus, but he will not be as docile.
and I kind of, going back to your last question real quick, I think shows that do well as movie musicals are some of the ones that started out that way. Like, I think,
yeah.
It was a little easier for me to believe The Sound of Music live, because what is so famous about The Sound of Music is Julie Andrews in the movie. You know, like, it was already presented to us that way, and it was already... No, I know that. Yes, sure. I mean, The Wizard of Oz is a play and a movie musical, but it's easier for us
now,
to
buy. Now, in fairness, it is the stage version is adapted from the film versus it being the other way around.
But I think it's easier to believe those movie musicals, because that was the famous way. Maybe it's just me growing up, but that was the
right.
Sound of Music was presented to me with Julie Andrews spinning on a mountain.
For all of those golden age of Broadway ones. Yeah, for sure. The film is this iconic statement. I mean, King and I, Oklahoma, like all of those. You probably experienced it as a film first.
Sure. And I think, but I also think that some of the more recent ones, the Sweeney Todds and the Les Mis, is the Les Mis. I didn't love Les Mis. It was, oh my gosh, that's the cutest pillow in the world.
Oh, thank you. I didn't have myself on screen when you said that, but it was given to me by my Sean and I directed Guys and Dolls recently, and it was this almost brought me to tears because I told all the students on like one of the first days that bushel in a pack is something my grandfather would sing all the time. Still does, I think, but. That song was very special to me. So I was having a particularly bad tech week for that show. That was the, I think Lee and I have talked about this, but that was the one, I don't necessarily want to go on record for this, but I usually have a rule in education, which is in terms of like how I can swear around children. If you can say it in a DreamWorks movie, it's appropriate enough to say to children. And I went slightly beyond Shrek that week. it was I'm sorry.
We've all been there. All been there.
Yes.
But I think going to that last thing, that last point, I think I wasn't a huge Les Mis fan 10 years ago or whenever that movie came out. And I think I could relate to non-theater people when I saw that movie because I wasn't a huge fan. And then having seen the movie, I feel like I don't want to say like dumbed down a little, but kind of. Like, I mean, it appeals to me.
It was a film.
You know, I didn't like Les Mis, and I went and saw it because everyone else was seeing it. And it did eventually lead me to like that show. And now I would never go back and watch the movie again. Mm. But as someone who's not a theater person, I think that sometimes those movies do give access to people who maybe wouldn't, you know, maybe someone saw Sweeney Todd just because Johnny Depp was in it.
For sure.
And
and
then when I did Sweeney Todd, they were like, oh, I've heard of that. And that's kind of okay. I'll come see you in it now. And so maybe it does eventually bring them some weird way.
It's that trickle down effect.
Yeah. Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
It's positive.
Well, to kind of wind down on this, because we have hit a lot of amazing points today. I guess we all have to kind of acknowledge that we're in a very odd and specific version of theater right now. And I guess we got to figure out where we go from here. So Lee and Christy, you are, doing some amazing work right now, in terms of, accessible theater. I plug you guys all the time when I'm doing my readings, to follow Showcase on Main on Facebook to see your concerts. And I thank you and, you know, and Emily, you're helping us with our readings, and all that. So I guess just, it's an open-ended question that won't be figured out today, but where, when, and I do mean when we return to anywhere close to normalcy, what is the future of streaming and live theater? Do you think that, because I don't even know that we're going to be able to jump right back in. Where do you think we go from here in terms of these new avenues and how we balance between still keeping live theater what it is and opening it up to people who are now brought into the world because of this?
I think the pandemic right now has forced theaters to adapt and to be flexible and to try and maintain a connection with their audience when we are together apart, right? and so a lot of theaters, at least within my sphere, have moved their content as much as they can to being digital. I've seen, you know, and I participate in a lot just new play works and that kind of thing. And so a lot of those have very easily moved into like Zoom reading, that kind of thing. There's a group here in Atlanta, that Shakespeare on Draft, they were supposed to do a production of Romeo and Juliet. And of course it got canceled. And so then they transformed it into a theater that was experienced as Zoom. And so all of the different actors were in their own places, but they were all interacting and they had rehearsed it so that they would be like passing things to each other, and that the idea that they were in the same room was, you know, they tried to preserve that. They also had the live chat going on, they were streaming it on Facebook. And that was fascinating to watch because it became the audience was also kind of involved in the production and commenting on, and the actors were able to see that approach a sense of community that you have in a performance setting that wasn't quite as sterile as a lot of digital content can tend to be with theater now. And I, you, Robert, I am desperately looking forward to the day that we can all be in the same room again and experiencing the theater as we want it to be. And, you know, you hear the joke that like, we've survived plagues before. Like this is not our first rodeo with having to just hunker down and wait it out. And theater is not necessarily going anywhere, but it is going to need to adapt and evolve a little bit.
I have a blue blanket in storage somewhere that is dependent on us someday doing live theater.
That sounds like a very, very cool idea. That's really awesome. The Romeo and Juliet, that sounds really cool.
It was very, very cool.
I'm going to be super honest. I really hope we get back to normal, because this is so much more work than
yes, God, yes.
We're taking a week off from doing anything Showcase on Main this week because I need a break. It's so much more planning. It's so much more logistics.
Because it's making sure one time.
You have to sound check everyone. Visually, it's not just one sound check. It's a pain in the ass. I don't know. Pain in the ass.
No, you're fine. You're fine. For me, I know that the show I mentioned right at the top of this, I'm in a production of Beauty and the Beast, that we are going to meet, once we're allowed to meet again, it's going to be amazing because we're going to have so much more time to put this thing together, make it tight, really make it work. But for now, we're trying to, I know we're going to start doing Zoom meetings soon. And I can only imagine the cacophony of sound that's going to come trying to sync up music rehearsals when everyone has a different internet connection.
I've tried that for now two different rehearsals. It doesn't work. It's just Zoom isn't there yet. And thank God we have Zoom. Thank God we have streaming. FaceTime and all of these things where we can do things like this together. But the technology just isn't there yet. There's sound lags. There's different internet speeds. There's all of these things.
I was watching some of the Sondheim concert today, and it was like, there were some amazing. There were some beautiful. Thankfully, I was watching the. I guess they cut out all of the the hiccups.
They ended up abandoning all of their live portions because we're just not there yet, and that's okay. Yeah. We weren't planning for this, it is. I mean, I can't wait to be sitting in a room of 20 people again, working on a song. because
well, I was just thinking about the, there were so many beautiful duets, and it was beautiful to hear those duets, but in the back of my mind, just knowing how this works, I'm thinking they are recording the entire song by themselves. Just mm-hmm. waiting.
The most amazing thing.
Ladies on, who lunch.
The most amazing thing on that show was Someone in a Tree. That's a show, that's a song that is extremely difficult to do when there are four people sitting next to each other. For four people to sing that song in different states is
mind-boggling.
Well, and I think no matter how phenomenal an actress you are or actor, even the performances last night, Move On from Sending the Park with George, for example, a beautiful song, and even more important than singing it beautifully is emoting it correctly. And I feel like no matter how phenomenal you are at flipping in the zone and flipping out of it, you can't do that by yourself. Like, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal is sitting in his bedroom by himself, pretending
to his computer screen.
Right. And it was great for what it was. And I'm so glad that we had that. But think about how much better it would have been had we been in the same room together. Mm-hmm. And that's
I
could do virtual concerts till we're purple. And it's fun and okay. And it's
also
it's
can I just say that I hate to be that guy, but did anybody else think that Ben Platt looked like what a 1970s movie would portray a homosexual to look like? The overalls, the mustache, the bad, give your best quick take of a straight guy playing what he thinks a bad gay is. That was my big takeaway from It Takes Two.
I did not get that. I will watch it now and try to look for that aspect of it.
I'm like, thank I mean, dude, know. Like, I've forgotten to shave for a day in the past, but like, come on, buddy, you can do that.
But I think like what we miss most about theater is not just the audience being right in front of you and playing off of your audience, but mm-hmm. playing off your friends. Like, that's why we do theater, is to be together.
The community.
Yeah, and no matter how many times I virtual concert with my closest friends, it's not the same as doing Godspell with them live. Like we can Godspell concert all, but it's our show is so much more special because we're all together, and that's you can't do a musical like this.
There is just as much character development built into under your breath ad libs as there is for the whole. I mean, Christy, I know
reactions, right?
Yeah,
you know, like that listening and responding in the moment, and really like finding yourself caught up and
acting is reacting.
I was like, I hate to go back to acting number one, but the whole acting is reacting thing is 100% true, and you can't react to a freaking computer screen.
Yeah.
First off, there's the lag, and that's annoying.
And it comes back to what we were saying before, like you only get that one time,
mm-hmm.
and. And so I'm just thinking, I'm imagining those people doing those duets last night. And I'm thinking like, so they had to interpret both sides of the story because
on their own
doing all of the work. And then how awkward does it look when the person that you're acting opposite interpreted it a completely different way? And now your reactions are totally not what they're supposed to be.
I've actually been getting scared because I've gotten three notifications in the past 10 minutes that my internet connection is unstable. So it's like, you know, I can, this is a free form conversation. Yeah. But this is a free form conversation. You know, imagine we're live streaming a play.
That was part of the problem last night. They were ready to go at 8:00 and then they had tech issue. Mm-hmm. Tech issue. And it had nothing to do with the performers. It was literally the internet, the technical aspects.
Well, we did a concert last week, and I swiped the wrong direction on my trackpad, and we disappeared. Like, we were in the and so this was our, like, concert dedicated to amazing, talented youth, and the poor kids standing there like, why don't they're gone?
Hi.
There's no winner.
And we were
like, like, that's, you know, that's a sad reality.
I actually did this this format that I'm, well, you guys can't see it right now, but the studio that I, the virtual studio that I am in, was my first time doing it today for my live stream for my reading. And my I had it going. It was just on, you know, it was picture of the Emerald City with the book cover, and it said, you know, reading starts at 5. And I sat down ready to go, turned my mouse on, and my mouse just wouldn't turn on. So I'm just, I'm commenting on the video that's live. I'll be there in a moment. My my I can't transition, so I'm just gonna wait.
You're just at the mercy of another, you know, live theater is already hard enough.
For real, yeah.
Crazy.
But to end on a positive note, it is incredible what we have been able to accomplish with so short notice, so short planning. The fact that even this conversation is possible, and the concerts that you guys have been doing for the past month, and are like the fact that Art found a way, and that we are, you know, we're not going to let a little thing.
We're the ultimate, like, improvisers and adaptive artists. We got it. I wanted to plug just very quickly.
I was actually just going to ask about plugs. Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of theater companies that have put out a call for playwrights to write pieces specifically for digital performance formats. And so, like, I wrote a 10-minute play where it's a first date that was supposed to happen, and then shelter in place got ordered. And so now he's trying to, like, work it out over a Zoom call. And so he's ordered takeout for himself and takeout for her. It's super cute and it's funny, but it is meant to be performed, and it's built in the awkwardness of the first date with also the awkwardness of this video, you know, telecommunication software that we're all having to deal with. Like, wait, are you muted? Are you lagging? Are you, what's going on? I don't know, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's like sort of
to think about a first date like that.
For real, yeah. hey, it's on my new PlayX website. Check it out. But the idea that, like, as an artistic community, that we have kind of looked at this and said, okay, what can we do to still create? What can we do to still connect with people in this imperfect format? Is such a wonderful, makes me so proud of, you know, being a theater artist and being a part of that larger community. You know, it's great.
Well, Emily, Lee, Christy, thank you guys so, so, so much for coming on and helping me with this amazing discussion, but also, you know, our first foray into a video podcast. Hi, Sullivan.
So cute.
I hope you all enjoyed.
You've got to do it. You've got to. He's born for it.
Well, I hope everybody out there has enjoyed our first video podcast, unless, of course, you are listening, in which case this may not have seemed any different to you. But this will be going up soon. Like I said, Emily and Lee and Christy, you guys are welcome back anytime. This was an incredible amount of fun. And trust that we will definitely do more of these. But until next time, I am Robert Jean Flesio, signing off.